We read from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, from the 13th chapter entitled Nature, the Enjoyer, and Consciousness, text number
13. Akartaram cha pasyati prakrityaiva cha karmani kriyamanani sarvashah ya pasyati tahatmanam akartaram cha pasyati.
Translation. One who can see that all activities are performed by the body, which is created of material nature, and sees that the self does nothing actually sees. Purport. This body is made by material nature under the direction of the supersoul, and whatever activities are going on in respect to one's body are not his doing. Whatever one is supposed to do, either for happiness or for distress, one is forced to do because of the bodily constitution. The self, however, is outside all these bodily activities. This body is given according to one's past desires. To fulfill desires, one is given the body, with which he acts accordingly. Practically speaking, the body is a machine designed by the Supreme Lord to fulfill desires. Because of desires, one is put into difficult circumstances to suffer or to enjoy. This transcendental vision of the living entity, when developed, makes one separate from bodily activities. One who has such a vision is actual a seer.
Om Agyana Timanandasya Ginnanana Salakya Saktura Minitamyana Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Adaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So it is explained in the Bhagavad Gita, Yantra Rudani Mayaya, that we are situated within the body as if we are within a machine. And so sometimes it is compared to the situation of a man who is entered into a car, and that the body is just like a car, kind of like a vehicle, and that we are moving around in this vehicle. But we should know that it's not entirely like a car. There is a difference. And the difference is that the body, unlike a car, already has certain directions it wants to go, right? And whereas a car is completely in the control of the driver, the body is not. The body is driving on its own, in its own direction. A dog has to follow his nose, right? There's nothing he can do about it. And he has to mark his territory by lifting his leg in certain places and so forth. Each particular body dictates our actions. And we are similarly not at all free in choice. We are just being dictated by our senses. Rupa Goswami explains that the senses are very demanding. Kamarinam kotida pulita dunidesas tesam jatamayi nakaruna nataputraya. It is explained that these senses are pushing us and pushing us and pushing us, and there's not much we can do. We have to obey. I sometimes do a little dramatic performance of the situation to illustrate it a little better. It's like telephones ringing. Ring, ring, ring. Yes, this is your tongue, right? We haven't eaten for 15 minutes. What's going on, you know? We want to taste something, at least a sweet, something light, okay? Yes, Mr. Tongue, just a moment, please. I don't have anything in my pocket, but I'll bring something. Okay, and hurry up, right? Ring, 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 you know? Here are your eyes, you know. We are bored stiff. We're looking all the time at the same boring things. Is there anything exciting to see, you know? Well, what would you think of a movie? Isn't there anything more exciting than that? You know, something real life? I'll do my best. I'll get back to you. Okay. Ring, ring, ring. This is your tongue again. Are you doing something for me or what, you know? Ring, 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 you know. The genital on the line. Ay, ay, ay. yes, I know you're there. We want action. Oh, I see. Right away. Yes, sir. I'll try and do something about it. But lately I haven't been very lucky, you know. No one was interested in me. What to do? Anyway, I'll try. We go into the streets, you know, and like, wink, wink, you know. What can you do, right, when you have to satisfy the demands of the senses, right? And again, you know, as we're busy satisfying one, the other one's ringing, you know, hey, what about me? You know, what about me? So like this, at the end of the day, we're exhausted, you know, we worked so much all day, we broke our backs to satisfy these senses, yes. And you know what we get? What we get is when we've done everything for them, all we get, is this all you could do? Right? Is this all? Right? You know, couldn't you bring something better? Is this all? Go back and try again, you useless bum. And then we go again. You see, some people are walking 24 hours around the clock. They cannot even sleep anymore at night. Right? They're up the whole night. What for? Because these senses go, 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 more, more. At 3:30 in the morning, they're finally too drunk to even stand on their legs anymore and wind up on a park bench. Only a few hours later to go and work, work, work. If we would have a job and we'd have to work for such a boss, you know, would we continue doing that? Huh? Would we do that? Or would we go one day to our boss and just step in the office and say, boss, I want to tell you something, boss. Right? Oh? Don't waste my time. What is it? Right? Boss. Jump in the lake, boss. Boss, stuff it, boss. Huh? And some varieties of there. And we would just, we wouldn't care anymore that we would lose our job. We would just walk out. But for these senses, oh, no, 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 no. No, they'll get very angry with me. I can't do that. You know, if I will stop listening to them, they will get so angry. Very dangerous. Huh? Yes. The dictates of the body and of our nature are very, very strong. The senses are very powerful, and who dares to deny them what they want? This is dangerous. Freud has warned about it. Many dangerous cases. You can go schizophrenic if you're not careful, or psychotic, or some other variety. Freud has painted for us the pressure cooker model, right? Everyone knows it. There is a pressure cooker up there, here in our head. The top part is like a pressure cooker. And when the steam starts coming out of your ears, you know, that's when you know that it's getting dangerous, you know. And then if you ignore that part, right, then soon, you know, one day just explosion, right? Anything can happen. Anything can happen. And you can get a volcanic eruption. And when you get suddenly, from all these repressed feelings, a volcanic eruption, then you just don't know what your emotions will do. They'll drag you anywhere, and, you know, you'll just be forced to act whatever they dictate, and there's nothing that can be done about it. Yes, so Krishna consciousness is a very bold process, because Krishna consciousness demands that we just control the senses. That we completely ignore the senses. Don't do what Freud said, watch out. But fearlessly we proceed, you know, in Krishna consciousness, simply because we're chanting Hare Krishna. We say, because you're chanting Hare Krishna, you can do anything. You can even control the senses. So, is it really true? That is the question. Well, you know, we have our doubts sometimes because we have seen cases, heard of cases where the volcanic eruptions did take place. And if we think about it, you know, it can really put the mind to think, right? I'm scratching my head, not for no reason. Yes. Then there's the other type. The type that doesn't explode, but the type that just gets worn out by years and years and years of suppressing the desires. They get more and more tired until the end they feel like a flat tire, right? And they just don't have any more life, you know. What's wrong with you? Nothing. Cannot lift my lips anymore. They're so heavy. No more energy to do anything, right? That stage, when one has come to that, right, then one feels completely finished, right? So is this our fate? Those who heroically try to control those horrible senses, those slave drivers of senses, maybe better we be honest, right? Yes. This is a time where we consider this point. Maybe better be honest. With ourselves and admit our real nature, isn't it? So this is the consideration. We are thinking like this. So how do we respond to all this? What are we going to do with all this? Uh-oh, he's covered this camera again. Yes, how to deal with this? So this is a problem that we are being faced with, and is it really true? Should we become more honest? Should we just... is this the problem? Is this what went wrong with ISKCON? Is that what it is? I mean, you know... have we put our finger on the problem at last? We have never been honest. And if we would all just be a little more honest... I feel it too. Yes, my heart is beating. Is your heart beating too? Well, I guess we have to be honest. And yes, in this way, one can, of course, spend his days. The question, though, is it's confusing. It's quite confusing, isn't it? Because as we are getting more and more honest, we are finding that we honestly are getting nowhere. Right? This is the problem. So there's a complication there. How honest can one get, you know, in this world? Right? Certainly. If you get too honest, then before you know it, all kinds of things start happening. You get in some serious trouble there, right? Serious trouble. Because the senses will drag you anywhere and everywhere, and before you know it, oh, where are we going, you know? Like, yes, then you are the passenger, no longer in control, and they, you know, like, hoo-hoo. They are not wasting any time. They go for it. So in this way, then we become the servant of the senses. So that is a little difficult. So sense control, is it really unnatural? I don't know. I think everyone has to control his senses to some degree, right? You know, when you go in a shop, you cannot just fill your pockets, right? Although your fingers may feel like doing it, you just, the store detective, watch out. Don't do it, you get in trouble. But that inclination is there, right? Chanakya Pandit says about this lady, he speaks about a lady who was talking to one man while looking at another and thinking of a third. Right? Yes. So, that can also get really complicated, right? And then you get into complicated things. I remember some songs I used to hear like that were quite complicating. I was looking back to see if she was looking back, if I was looking back at her, something like that. You know, and the mind goes like, my God, you know. The complications that come from all these things are amazing. Huh? Just because the senses dictate, before you know it, you have to earn a lot of money to pay for it. Right? And you'll find that, you know, the amount of austerity that has to be performed is like tremendous. So what to do about it? Can we actually conquer the senses? Can we conquer material desires? Is it possible? Right? Or we've heard about it, theoretically in the books, we read about all these personalities, but do we have them in ISKCON also? Is there anyone in ISKCON who's really conquered the senses? That's what I want to know, you know. Yes. I would like to know this. Yes. Other than Prabhupada, of course. Is it possible today, still, for us to be successful in this process? It doesn't seem that it works. And why isn't it working? That is the question. Right? Why isn't it working? Yes. So, after this whole introduction, I guess now I'm going to go to the other side of the coin. You know, I'm going to turn the coin over and I go to the spiritual side, which we are usually discussing. Of course, we have all just eaten a feast, right? And everyone is sitting comfortably. It's still nice sitting like that after, with all that prasadam like that. You feel your stomach there. Yes, this is the nature. Would anyone like to take a little more cake, maybe? A little cream on top? And surprise, we're going to have ice cream later on. Ready for that? Well, maybe a little, huh? And then after the ice cream, then how much more can we take after that? Would anyone be able to eat after a gulab jamun competition? After 84 gulab jamuns? It is not easy. The 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam deals with that topic. Bhakti parasana bhava viraktir and yatta chaisa trika eva kala prapada manasya yata satasyus tusti pusti ksut apaya nugasam. It's quite a mouthful. And that verse, it means that just as one, while eating, is becoming filled up and gradually loses one's taste for foodstuffs, although in the beginning one was so hungry, then after a while, one even the look of something more to eat, like, oh, take it away, you know, like, no, I don't want anymore. It makes us nauseous even to think of more foodstuffs. This is it, yes? So it is said that real spiritual life is like that. But it's all based on taste. When there's no taste, right, then it's not possible. So, to conquer these senses is really a matter of taste. You say, yeah, I know. You have any taste? I never had any. Nothing. No. Come to this temple, you know, every day religiously to Mangalarti, and after that the whole thing, walk around Tulsi, Brahmahat, Jadikanicha, the whole thing, you know, chant Hare Krishna 16 rounds, sometimes even one extra. Sit through Bhagavatam class every day. What torture, you know. Gosh, I tolerated it all, you know. I tolerated all this torture for so many years, and still no taste at all. Phew, you know, I don't know. How long can I go on with this, you know? I'm getting tired of it all. One might think like that. I would like to submit that taste is there, but we are just absent-minded. I forgot where it was, but somewhere on the way we did a little test, and we asked someone, what were the deities wearing today? Any volunteer? Not the pujari, of course. What color were the deities wearing today? Was it blue? Was it red?
Some white and some gold.
Something. He was looking. But how many times? How many times did we take darshan and then no idea, actually. No idea what they were wearing. No idea. Didn't even see it. Because our mind wasn't there. We were so many times in the temple, but our mind was somewhere completely different. Our mind was floating away and dreaming along. And in this way, everyone is roaming around in the world in his dreams. And we are also walking in Krishna consciousness, dreaming of sense gratification. And it says, although we are externally follow everything in the mind, We are still going on. Oh, we haven't stopped yet. In the mind, we still are having so much sense gratification. Oh, there are no reactions for thoughts in Kali Yuga, they say. But whatever we are contemplating in the mind, sooner or later, we have to put it into action. Yes, that's the nature of the mind. So we have to become open and see the good side of things. My God, this is meaning serious business here. A little distracting. The mind, the camera. Okay, where am I? What's my name? Where are we here? I'm losing my memory. I'm losing it completely. This is what happens. Sometimes we lose control of the mind. It is the mind that is our big enemy. It is that mind that is doing it to us. Oh, this mind, right? This is causing so much disturbance. Worse than the senses is the mind. Because the senses, okay, one can sort of control. One can say no. The senses push and we say no. But then afterwards, the mind just goes on and on and on and on and on. To say no in the moment is easy. But to have to face the mind that is dwelling on it, that is very, very difficult. So, therefore, we have to not allow any time for the mind, it is said in Krishna consciousness. This is the answer. Keep that mind completely very, very busy. Prabhupada many times said that an idle mind is the devil's workshop. And the devil's workshop means sex and money, Prabhupada said. Kamini kanchini. That's what it means. Nothing else. Right? Don't think that in the devil's workshop anything else is being made. That's it. Sex and money. And that's on our mind, sooner or later. So, we have to get busy. So when we are looking to enjoy, then in Krishna consciousness we are looking for taste and taste and taste. I'm not getting any taste. I'm trying, you know, but I'm not getting any taste. Because we try to enjoy spiritual life. But when we give up this spirit and we just forget that we want to enjoy in Krishna consciousness, and when we just work very hard, then suddenly everything becomes very, very ecstatic. That's the secret. To work for her. It's like going to the dentist, you know, it's like... Or if someone is about to give you an injection, you know it's coming and you try to look... try to act casual, but you're following every second until it's in. Right? So, okay, it was done. What a relief. Anyway, so the point I was trying to make is that... Just think of a Janmashtami. It's Janmashtami, and if we think, oh, you know, Janmashtami, will it be nice? Are we going to have a nice festival? I hope so. You know, last year wasn't so nice. I hope this year is going to be better. I didn't like the dancer. It was very boring and always the same, and the play wasn't so good, you know. Anyway, whatever. One may think like this and hope that one will enjoy more this year. But the real way to enjoy Janmashtami is if on Janmashtami day we get up at 1 o'clock, and we start chanting really early, and we've chanted already like something like 25 rounds before Mangalarti. So then when we walk into Mangalarti, we feel a little better than usual. Right? We do feel a little bit on top of the world, you know. We might even lead the kirtan spontaneously, you know, like in a good one too after 25 rounds, right? So by the time Mangalarti is over with 25 rounds and a kirtan led, you know, we feel already a lot better on top of the world. We chant a little more, and then, you know, comes the time to cook, right? Everyone can cook on Janmashtami. We start cooking, you know, many pots at the same time, stacks of preparations later. was intense, but here it is for Krishna, blissful. Now is the time, a quick shower, and then maybe I can join in the Krishna book reading, because in many temples on Janmashtami, they have a continuous reading of the Krishna book throughout the day, somewhere, in one room, and all the devotees take turn in that, and it's quite nice. So, you know, read your half hour of Krishna book, okay, out loud, and some people sit there to listen, and it's going on the whole day. Okay, the Krishna book reading, that's done, right? And in this way, the whole day, one is super engaged. One helps to clean, one helps to carry, one helps to set up for the Abhishek, one helps with everything. And by the time it's midnight, right, one is almost half dead, but on the other hand, you know, still alive somehow or other, still going for it. And then in the final arti, it's like one is almost delirious, you know, almost lost it. I mean, almost no longer on the ground, right? Flying practically. And then after that, when it's finally time for prasadam, then tears of ecstasy spontaneous will come to one's eyes after such a day, after such a Janmashtami. Because one has given it all his energy. So if we feel that we are not getting any taste, and if we feel that our mind is too much, and if our mind starts telling us that we'd better get honest, or like that, then in reality, we just don't have enough to do. That's the bottom line. We just don't have enough service. That's actually the real answer. In some temples I would get tomatoes for this, I know. But that's not allowed. My copyright, my doctor says no tomatoes, so I'm sorry. And eggs is against the regulative principles, so you have to behave. I'm very sorry. This cannot be done. But it is a fact. If your mind tells you that maybe I should get honest, it just means you don't have enough service. If you would have so much service that you would have only time to worry about how am I going to possibly chant my rounds today, I got so much to do and I got to get my reading in as well, I'm so tired, you know. Oh, I think I could sleep on this stove. No, don't do that. Stay awake. Keep on stirring. Right? And it's like, you know, Sankirtan devotees that have been found, please take this book. Or the never-ending Gayatri mantra. Have you chanted that also? Oh. Oh. Forty-five minutes for a Gayatri. Wow. All these varieties of things. Oh, it's not that devotees can never rest, you know, sometimes we can rest. But the real spirit is that, you know, just to be really, really busy for Krishna. And if we do, you become blissful. It is a fact. Something is there, you know, when you have no time and nothing to even think about yourself and just be so busy for Krishna. And then in the middle of all that, well, somehow or other, you have to take care of yourself as well. If life is like that, those are the ecstatic days. Although you are a little tired, I gotta admit, at times. But those are actually the days that we get off the mental platform. Those are the days when taste is there and when everything is enlivened and when we have no time for the body and the senses, you know, are not even anywhere near in sight. Ring, 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 you know, I mean, no time to answer the telephone, right? I'm too busy, you know, can't you see, you know, like, put it on the automatic entering machine, right? Okay, sorry, we're not home right now, but if you want to leave a message, you know, then speak after the beep. Here's the tongue, you know, are we going to do something about it? That's all those things are recorded in the answer machine. But there's no time for it. Yes, later you may listen to those messages, but well, who cares? Then the tongue is too tired, right? At night, when we finally come home and we turn on the entering machine, the tongue says, I want to eat something. You say, oh, come on, you know, we're going to sleep now, you know, give us a break. And other senses, right? Other senses, they want some action, right? Remember which ones? And we're saying, action, you know. I'm too tired for any action. Forget that, you know. I just want to sleep, you know. Leave me alone. Right? This is actually our life. We are not brahmanas. We are not great exalted pandits. We cannot control ourselves by learning Sanskrit slokas. We will never make it by just studying scriptures all day and putting on little round glasses and looking really intellectual at the scriptures, you know, and tie our dhotis and saris in very Indian fashions and being like highly cultured, and in this way come in sattva gun, you know. We're never going to be in sattva gun because we're just not from those kind of backgrounds, right? Those people outside, they're not in sattva gun, and neither were we, you know. And up here, we're still not that much in sattva gun. We still want something, action, you know. So therefore, our saving grace is to work with this, with our body, with our mind, and our senses for Krishna. Right? That actually is the way to control the mind. Of course, as the years go by, one becomes a little more thoughtful. That is a fact, right? That is also true. When you're a little older, then you can take a little more time to sit and think. Then you can't run around all day. As the hairs are growing gray and the face is getting wrinkled, then, and the body is getting a little more heavy and the joints are getting stiff, right? In those days, you know, we actually don't mind thinking a bit. And even if the senses are making noise, we say, yes, yes, that's all right. Calm down, you know, really. Just relax, you know, we're not going to get excited now. I'm too old for all that now. Yes, that's all right. At that stage of one's life, one may become a little more thoughtful and actually have some time for philosophy and think about life for a change, which one hasn't done his whole life. But then one thinks, what am I doing now? I'm thinking, yes. So this is good. So it says, prana arta diya vacha. One must give prana, one's energy, all one's energy. And when one has no more prana left, no more energy left, right? Diya. Then one can give his intelligence, right? Then next is artha, one's wealth. So that can even be given after one leaves the body, because one can leave everything in the will to Krishna. So that is an important thing. If we make our will, we should make it to Krishna. In Radhadesh, there was one devotee, he had a house, right, in a city not too far from Radhadesh, and he knocked out the wall in his house, and he made like a big room, and he put deities in the room, and he made the whole house into a temple, and it was very nice. We all used to go there sometimes. And then one day he visited Radhadesh, and there was the kirtan, and they were just going, Nitai Gaur Hari Bol, and he fell backwards, and that was it. Left his body on the spot, in the middle of the kirtan. Boom, like that. Yeah, you know, and then, so that was of course a shock for everyone, and anyway, but it was of course an auspicious way to leave the body. But unfortunately, the house, he had never left it to ISKCON. So that was taken by his family and everything and sold later on, and nothing went to Krishna. What a shame. So, don't forget, prana, artha, that make your will now, in the name of Krishna, before it's too late. Okay? Prana, artha, diya, is intelligence, and vacha means words. So if you can't do anything, if you cannot use your energy because you have none, if you cannot give your intelligence because what can you do? When they were handing it out, they missed you somehow or other. Didn't get any. Too bad. Wealth, you know, never had a dime in my life. And vacha, words. Then at least one has to offer one's words to Krishna. One has to chant Hare Krishna. Well, if you can't do that, yeah, well, then offer your thoughts to Krishna. What else can you do? Then meditate on Krishna. But the best way is to at least chant Hare Krishna. But if we can do it all, prana arta diya vacha, if we can offer everything we have with all our energy, all our possessions, with all our intelligence and all our words for Krishna, then guaranteed the senses will have no chance. No chance. No way they're going to wear us down. Never. We'll just be enlivened. We'll be completely spiritually surcharged. We'll feel transcendental and tolerant. And we can handle it. This movement has produced great saints already. Srila Prabhupada told us to every year remember the disappearance day of Jayananda Prabhu. And he was a living saint, an American saint, right? He was a saint from the West, an ISKCON saint. If anyone was an ISKCON man, then it was Jayananda. Because Jayananda was never ever anything else but a typical ISKCON devotee. He was into Harinam. He was into taking lots of prasadam, especially halva, in large quantities, and making sure that everyone else was getting it too. He would wake up devotees in the middle of the night and put like a dripping gulab jamun in their mouths, you know. I brought you some prasadam, Prabhu. Very low. Prasadam stories about Jayananda. There's one story that once they were going to go for a program in a prison, right? All the devotees in Jayananda had arranged that they were going to go for this prison program. They're going to do a kirtan there, and they had a van. And then Jayananda thought there should be some nice prasadam. So they asked Dhanavir to cook the feast. So he cooked some halva, and it was nice hot halva with a lot of ghee floating on top, you know, and many nice things inside. It was really good halva, golden brown with golden syrup inside. And then he had made simply wonderful stacks of them. So all that was in the van. And then they were driving on the way to the program, and the van was full with devotees. And then Jayananda said, "Smells good, huh? That's halva, isn't it?" The devotee said, "Yeah, it's really good. Looks good, too." Jayananda said, "Well, maybe we should test it, you know, just to make sure." The devotee said, "Good idea." So everyone got a little bit of halva and then said, "What about the Simplies? Do you think they're all right?" "I don't know about that. I think we'd better test them also." So then everyone got a Simply Wonderful, tested that as well. And then Jayananda said, "You know what? Shall we have a little more of that halva?" And then everyone, "More halva, more halva." And Dhanavir was like, you know, like, but. And then in no time, they had finished everything. Everything, the whole thing. And they were on the way to the jail, and Dhanavir was murmuring in himself, you know, going like, "This is sinful, you know. This is an offense, you know. Like, I mean, do you realize, you know, like, what you've just done, you know?" Like, and he looked at Jayananda, and he couldn't say anything because Jayananda was a senior devotee, but he was murmuring in the back. He said, "This is like incredible. This is too much. Look at these lusty devotees. Look, you know, they can't control their senses." Like this he was talking. And then they came to the jail, and then they were stopped at the gate, and the jailkeeper said, "Oh, you are coming for the program?" He said, "Yes, we're coming for the program." And they said, the guard said, "Do you know the rules?" They said, "Yes." He said, "No food. Did you bring any food?" They said, "No, we didn't bring any." So, in this way, around Jayananda, it was always fun and always transcendental. But when it came to chanting his rounds, he was just sitting there like a rock and just chanting. With so much concentration, just people looking at it were amazed, you know. Just looking like, you know, wow, he's really chanting. Look at him, you know, the way he's chanting. And of course, he was such a nice person that he could enthuse anybody about devotional service. And it is also said that he hated to spend money for Krishna. So at one point, Jayananda, therefore, when he was working, he was an engineer, actually. He was an engineer, but he didn't like to work as an engineer because he thought engineers were very proud. And because he was an engineer, he was someone who could fix everything, naturally, as engineers seem to be empowered. Our Varyan here is also an engineer, and he can fix anything, I think. At least many things. So Jayananda used to fix things in the temple, and he used to fix cars, and it said while he was fixing the cars, then his legs were sticking on from under the car, and then someone would say, "Hey Jayananda, what are you doing there?" And then Jayananda would start preaching to that person from under the car. So in this way, he was always engaged in that way. And while he was doing that work, he used to wear some karmi clothes. And he used to buy those from the Salvation Army for $1, you know, a set, a pant and shirt, something like that, really cheap, right? Because he hated to spend Krishna's money. He couldn't spend Krishna's money. On Sankirtan, he always slept in the car because he didn't want to spend anything for anything, right? So they told him, "Jayananda, you are a senior devotee. You cannot walk around in old pants like this, you know. Go and buy a pair of pants." So the temple president told him, "You must buy a pair of pants." He said, "I don't really need them, you know, I'm satisfied with these." He said, "No, you must buy them. Here is the money. Go buy a pair of pants." So Jayananda went into the shop and he put on the pants, and okay, they were okay. And then he was thinking, "How can I spend all this money on these pants? How can I give Krishna's money for these pants? I don't think I can do it." So he put his old pants over the other pants and tried to walk out of the shop, right? And sure enough, got arrested. He got arrested. So, in America it goes quite quick. In about 10 days later or so, he had to go to court for that. So he went to court. And then he was in court, and he explained the whole story to the judge. And he said, "You see, I am a monk, you know, and I have given everything in my life for Krishna, you know, like, and how? I've given up everything, and I just don't take anything for myself, and I just felt I couldn't do it, you know. I just felt that I couldn't do it. I couldn't spend this money on these pants, you know." And then everyone was so moved that finally the policeman who had arrested him, he said, "Your Honor, I'll pay for those pants." In this way, Jayananda had so much faith in Krishna that everyone became moved by him. And we saw at the end of his life, of course, he was very ill, and he got this leukemia, and he was he was dying, but he still continued. And he built one more Rath cart in that very diseased condition. Then he was in the hospital. And when he was in the hospital, he had a nice hospital room, and he took his bed, and it was such a nice bed, and he put a picture of Prabhupada on the bed, right? And he himself was sleeping on the floor. He said, "Because I never had a bed, you know, so how can I sleep in the bed? You know, that's for Prabhupada, not for me." So Prabhupada's picture was on the bed, and he was sleeping on a mat on the floor, right, in the hospital room. And he was chanting 64 rounds, well, at the end. Then, of course, then great pain came, but somehow or other he tolerated that without... It was very difficult, but he managed to go through this without any drugs, because he didn't want to take any intoxicant. And finally, he left his body surrounded by devotees. And Prabhupada, when he heard that, said that he had gone back to Godhead. So, and then afterwards Prabhupada said that we should observe the disappearance day of Jayananda on the Vaishnav calendar every year, and it's the day before Nrisimha Chaturdasi. So I'm just remembering a little bit about him. There are so many stories about Jayananda, and they're all very nice. And I just mention a few just for the sake of illustrating that in Is that there are actually many success stories in ISKCON. He's such a nice success story. That's why I'm just telling about him. But there are many other success stories of devotees who have taken advantage of this movement and who have gone back to Godhead. Right? So it is not at all that it is doesn't look very hopeful for us, and that, well, you know, ISKCON is, well, we don't know, but somewhere along the line, you know, something went sour, and here we are today. And, you know, what we need, you know what we need? Social reform. And, you know, maybe Varnashram is the answer to all questions, right? Whatever may be. So all these considerations may be very nice, but the real thing is pure devotional service does exist in ISKCON also. It is available today for anyone who wants it. It's not so difficult. It's just a matter of giving all of our energy in the service of Krishna. Okay, any questions or comments? Now I put on my glasses again so I can see somebody. No questions. This morning already, no questions. This evening, no. Oh, okay.
And sometimes we hear this philosophy that my karma is so heavy that just fully surrender.
Yeah, I like that point.
He says that sometimes we hear the philosophy that my karma is so heavy that, yeah, I cannot fully surrender. What to do? So there is an answer to this. And the answer to this is hidden on Krishna's lotus feet. Because on Krishna's lotus feet there are many, many marks. And one of the marks on Krishna's lotus feet is a thunderbolt. And why is the thunderbolt there on Krishna's transcendental lotus foot? It says, for those devotees who think my karma is so big, it is insurmountable. It is a huge mountain of insurmountable karma. It's bigger than Mount Everest. But Krishna, he smashes mountains with his thunderbolt. Right? Therefore, the thunderbolt on Krishna's lotus foot is for that purpose, of smashing that mountain of karma of the devotees who have that doubt. And if we had any, if you want any further confirmation, it's in the simple verse of Bhagavad Gita, which everyone in India knows, right? If you ask anyone in India on the train to quote a slok, they can quote this one, which is Sarva Dharmam Paricaya Mamekam Saranam Braja Aham Tvam Sarva Papibhyo Mukshayishyami Masucha. That is, which means, just surrender everything to me and I will deliver you from the reactions of your sinful activities. Do not fear. He even says at the end, for those mental cases who think, yes, but my karma, you know, like it's too much. Do not fear, do not worry. I'll take care of that. Thunderbolt on his lotus foot, same thing. And if you think, yes, but my mind, you know, my mind, for that is the little elephant stick, the stick with the hook and the point to control the elephant of the mind. If your mind is as big as an elephant, even that elephant can be controlled by Krishna's lotus feet. Therefore, taking shelter of Krishna's lotus feet is the answer. And how to take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet? Of all the devotees, who is the expert in taking shelter of Krishna's lotus feet? Okay, there's a ninefold process of devotional service. Sravanam, who is the one? Sravanam, listening. Sukadev. Acha. Kirtanam. Okay, Smaranam. I'm not going to give the answers this time. Smaranam? Okay. Okay. Next. Padasevanam. Who's that? Okay, he knows it's Lakshmi. So Lakshmi is always engaged in serving the lotus feet of Krishna. So if you want to take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, then we must do that by always being engaged in serving those lotus feet. So it's the same what I said in the class, but it's working very hard. By working day and even in the night, right? We must work so hard in the day for Krishna that even in the night we dream of devotional service. The whole day we must be cooking sabjis for Krishna, and then in our mind we must still be cooking at night. Then you're doing it pretty good. That's the perfection, if we come to this way. And I've seen in the old days when I used to still be on traveling Sankirtan, we had one devotee, he was our biggest distributor, and he used to wake up in the middle of the night. Take a book, go and wake somebody up and try to sell him a book. In his sleep, I'm serious, he is sleepwalking. Yes, trying to sell. He definitely became the number one Sankirtan devotee in the yatra. It's true, he really became the biggest Sankirtan devotee in the yatra in due course of time. But when he was a new bhakti, he was sleepwalking and even distributing books. Can you imagine? So, this is the perfection. If we can serve Krishna in our sleep, always serve his lotus feet, then your karma can't get you. Anyway, that's a good argument. Any other question? Yes.
If somebody has the service which he doesn't like at the moment, like for example Sankirtan is sometimes difficult, and when there is this period that somebody is giving up Sankirtan, it's usually going through like you have very much difficulties, you don't want to do it. Like this kind of things that you physically do, cleaning and cooking, is easy to do even without, even if you have bad mind. Like Sankirtan, for example, should such a devotee arrange his life again to be able to serve all day instead of sitting in a car and crying because he cannot go out?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, after I gave this fired up talk, you know, about being fired up and always engaged. Now let's talk about the human side, right? You know. I don't like to show that side very often, you know, like, because a soft side, you know, it's like not very. But anyway, okay. We'll show it for a moment, right? But no photos this time. The lights are on. So anyway. The thing is this, is that we do not have to suffer for Krishna to go back to the spiritual world and find and do the service we hate the most for Krishna, you know, to somehow or other get his mercy. We can choose something we have some attraction for. And if somehow or other we have been given a service which is very difficult for us, if it's too difficult, we do not have to be such heroes that we rather die on the job than ever admit that this is too much for me, I can't do it, or at least not anymore, and I need a break, give me something else, please be kind to me, you know. No, that's all right. One can ask and one can change service and look for something. But if we've come to the point where we cannot find any service anymore. If after so many years we just can't, it's like, yeah, what's it with you? I don't know, I just can't. I can't find anything. Then we have spiritual problems. Then the time should come that we just do menial service. If we can't think of any service, then let's start cleaning. Right? Then it's time to start cleaning. So somewhere we must find a service to become absorbed in, something. That's our saving grace, devotional service. So we must always look for some devotional service. But it doesn't have to be that we force ourselves in the impossible service, being tough, you know, and then one day, wow, what happened to him? Oh, he died. He died, you know. It was a little too much for him, this service, anyway. You know, so many. For him, there's another one. Next. Yes. Sankirtan. Another one drops by the wayside. Anyway, in every battle, you lose a few soldiers, you know. Some casualties will be there. We have to conquer. That's not our mood. That's not our mood. That mood has sometimes been there. I've also been in these Sankirtan meetings, you know. We had a Sankirtan leader who used to wear blue jeans, and he was an American, and he had a huge, big jacket. It was fat on all sides like that, you know, like nylon, everything. He came walking in like that. And then he would sit down in front of the devotees, and he'd grab a saffron chadar, throw it over his blue jeans, and said, "Man, we have to conquer. Are you prepared?" So I realized that spirit, that military spirit, and I can also appreciate that some people feel there's a little need for the human side in life. And my lecture was not against the human nature. I'm all for the human nature. But whatever your human nature is, right, please engage it in the service of Krishna, because otherwise it's pretty useless. That's our humble request, you know, that I don't care what the human nature is, but if we can please serve Krishna with it, that would be nice. And of course, that's also for me. I also have my limitations. I cannot do everything. I mean, it's like some service I want last week. If you make me the bookkeeper, after a little time, I will start eating the books of accounts. You know, as I discover, like, it's too much for me. So everyone has his limitations. Okay. I thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.